So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review me.
The referee has informed me that only one of Shawn Michaels' feet hit the floor.
What?
Therefore, the winner of the 1995 WWF Royal Rumble, the Heartbreak Kid.
Wait a minute, we have a replay.
Michael.
We're told we have a replay. Shawn Michaels, ladies and gentlemen. Let's go to the replay. Let's take a look. Well, there it is right there. The clothesline. He goes over. He's on the apron. He's hanging on the rope. And he's.
No beat.
He's one. Right plus foot.
There it is. Two referees. Not one, but two referees.
Welcome to Review Away. I am John Pollock with the TTC riding, Gracie hoodie wearing.
I don't ride the TTC.
Wheeling and rolling, son of a wing, waiting. And I'm having a hard time.
Weeding? What did you say? Weeding and
wheeling.
Rolling. Wheeling?
Wheeling, dealing. I said wheeling and rolling.
What am I wheeling?
You're wheeling figuratively in life. You are rolling.
What does that mean?
You're always rolling.
What the fuck does that
mean? You roll literally on the mats, and you roll figuratively in life as a huge member of the Asian community of wrestling fans. You're an icon.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks for that introduction. I don't know what brought that on, but the
exhaustion has brought that on for me.
yeah, sure. It's a it's been a longer couple of days.
Oh, it's here. Yeah, they're all blurring together. Wednesdays feel like Mondays sometimes.
Yeah, I know.
How are you? What's what are you drinking? What's in your little shaker? I'm
drinking a strawberry banana smoothie.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Yeah,
I love banana. Not big on strawberry flavored anything.
No, when you mix it all together, they don't really taste like the individual fruits anymore. It's just like something new. It's just all sugar.
Yeah, it is. But you can mask it with flavors that you tell yourself are this flavor. I don't think we even assume what the actual taste of like a banana. We know what a banana flavor tastes like. So there's tons of crap that they put in there to make you believe what it tastes like.
What are you talking about again? Like the smoothies?
I'm just comparing. When you say something is
banana flavored.
When you drink a pop that is grape flavored.
Yeah.
That is not grape.
Sure. Yeah.
But now your head tells you, oh, that's grape flavored.
Right. It's grape colored. Same with like orange, you know, like you eat an actual orange. It doesn't really taste like an orange, popsicle, for instance, you know? I imagine like these flavorings were probably come up with in like the 40s or 50s.
In some dark lab or laboratory somewhere.
And we've just grown to accept that, okay, this is artificial orange taste. I think we probably have the technology these days to make a more accurate representation of what the actual flavors taste like. So if we wanted to, I'm sure we could make a more accurate orange-flavored soda today.
There's probably going to be another 30 flavors in our world within 10 years. New stuff that are as...
there are new flavors all the time. You know, Mountain Dew had the flavor challenge?
And what?
Code Red. Wicked Winter White.
I don't know if those are flavors that have really taken off in society.
Yeah.
Want some Winter White?
Well, I'm just making that up. Blasty Blue?
Have alliteration when coming up with new flavors to really emphasize the flavor.
Let me look up the Mountain Dew flavors.
Why don't you share with people your flavor that you would come up with?
Okay.
What's your favorite flavor, first of all?
Of what?
Just anything. Like when you hear... of a flavor that instantly, like some people, it's watermelon. I love watermelon.
Watermelon's your favorite.
Watermelon banana flavored. I love those things.
I don't really have a flavor like that. I mean, when it comes to like candy, for instance, though, I mean, I suppose orange. I'm an orange guy.
Orange?
Yeah. Okay, Voltage. Here's the Mountain Dew names. You had the Voltage. People at the boat.
All things that could also be like over-the-counter supplements.
Yeah. Mountain Dew Voltage. Mountain Dew Whiteout.
Whiteout? Ugh, gross.
Mountain Dew Supernova.
Supernova.
And, of course, Code Red.
Of course.
So, basically, wow. What flavor sounds more devastating? Which one will rock?
They could all be linked to ephedra.
Anyway, I forget which one.
Have you tried any of those?
No.
You haven't tried Whiteout?
Nope. No, I haven't. Never been curious. I'm good with the regular Mountain Dew. I don't know when the last time I even had Mountain Dew was. These days, I'm when it comes to soda, I'm more of a root beer and ginger ale guy. Two sodas that, like, as a kid, I would never have. As a kid,
You didn't like ginger ale as a kid?
No, I hated it.
Oh,
yeah.
I loved it.
As a kid, it was just always
still
like
love it.
Coke, Pepsi, ice, or iced tea, Sprite, you know. Relatively safe options, but like
safe options. What ginger ale is just going off the radar?
Well, for me, yeah. As you get older, you know,
you never had ginger ale when you get sick. Your mom wouldn't get you ginger ale.
I think that's bullshit. I looked that up, and it's not. I've read people say that ginger ale helps, like
stomach. I'm not saying it helps. It's
a
just,
stomach.
It would
ache.
Be the go-to drink. If
Why?
You, if you've got
what
if
benefits?
You're sick.
What benefits does it actually have?
Hey, it's probably an urban myth, but. I always equate it with being sick, and now I just drink it regularly.
Right, okay.
Maybe that's why I'm always feeling sick. Placebo.
Maybe. We know if there's a doctor out there listening, please let us know.
Oh, do let us know. Diagnosis. Yeah. We once got that, remember?
Yeah,
we talked about something, and a doctor actually contacted us with, like, a diagnosis.
We never knew if it was an actual doctor. Probably it's just some guy Googling, making shit up. But, yeah, so now I branched out. I've even tried Dr. Pepper. Went really nuts.
Oh, wow.
The other day.
Maybe he's listening.
Ah, yes. Yes.
They never tried Dr. Salt.
No,
I don't think that would be pop that would really take off, would it?
Dr. Salt. I mean, I don't know. Maybe.
Do you find as you get older that you can really detect salt in, like shitty things you eat?
Yes, now more so than before because, like, I mean, I've finally started to learn how to do some basic cooking. And so, you know, you can really taste the difference if you're over-salting something or, like, you know.
Oh, God, yeah. It's the worst.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, there's so much salt in everything.
Salt
but
in everything.
Man, you just, like, you know, you order pizza. And, God, afterwards, it's like mouth hangover.
Salt in pizza as well?
I think so. I think there might be
salt in that coffee right now.
Dude, there's probably salt. I mean, when you shower, there's probably salt shit that's just going into your pores.
Probably, yeah.
Everything. It's just the world's just.
You're breathing, I'm sure. We're breathing
it's not
in
built
salt.
Perfectly at all. Like, we have such a reliance on salt.
But you know, salt, actually, salt tastes good. It brings out the flavor.
Oh, but too much of it. It just dries you out and, oh, it's gross.
Right, yeah.
I hate it.
Absorbs all the
And there's no escaping
water.
It.
Uh-huh, yeah.
You know what I saw today, which is very bizarre? We have this, this men's washroom outside down the hall, the community one in this building.
It's a unisex washroom.
No, it's not.
Which one?
No. I'm not talking about the one in our office, the one you actually have to go outside down the hall to.
Yeah.
So I'm going there, and I'm getting ready to wash my hands, and the guy next to me is like, I don't know what he's going through, but he's like dousing himself with water and like pouring it on top of his head and like washing his face. And I'm just curious. It's like, what is the line you cross where you go from using a sink to like giving yourself like a shower almost?
Yeah, I would say the top of the head is a little strange.
There's like water coming down. I'm like, dude. And what's funny about this washroom is that everyone has a passcode. There actually is a shower in this washroom that this man could use if he absolutely needed to. But it was like, man.
Wait a second, though. What was the length of his hair?
It was short.
Okay, like you? Like a shaved head?
A little bit. In between.
Because I think that makes a difference. I mean, if you're like Roman Reigns, you know, like I'm sure he's had this situation many times.
This guy wasn't going on TV.
Goes in the shower and just like douses, like over the sink probably just douses.
I've seen it a few times, and it's always at this washroom. And it's like, man, there's a certain line. It's like, that's there for you to clean your hands and move along.
I think I'm fake.
You're not cleaning your body here
at the
sink.
But I think a face wash is, you know, in order from time to time. You know, you have a long lunch, you have maybe like some rotisserie chicken, and your face is all...
You need a shower?
Greasy. This is not a shower, it's a face wash.
Dude, this guy, top of the head. Like, he needed it more than just a napkin. Like, he needed a towel.
That's a little weird. I don't know, maybe he sweats a lot, you know? Maybe he went for a bike ride mid lunch break.
God,
the washing the head, that's a little unusual. I've never seen that. Maybe he should. Have you ever seen guys like
wear a hat,
dip their head in underneath the sink?
I have seen that at like malls and stuff. It's just like some people just like no boundaries of what they can do at a public restroom.
Yeah, it could get bad. But
maybe it's misleading. I mean, we do refer to them as washrooms.
Yeah.
You know?
It doesn't bother me that much. Why does it bother you?
Because I'm right next to the guy. Like, I don't want to be getting sprayed with stuff, and it's just, it's too much.
Were you getting sprayed?
No, I wasn't. Bad? No, but it was just excessive.
Why? How does it ruin your day to see that next
to you? It doesn't ruin my day. It's just, this is not what the washroom is used for. This is not what it is designated for.
Says who? Who?
I say.
Yeah, you're.
I'm going to put up rules.
Are you the fucking god of washrooms now?
I am. You just said it was weird too.
Tell me, John. Tell me, god of washrooms. How should I be using the washroom? What should I be?
You go in. You do your business. Wash your hands. Clean them. Wipe them. And get the fuck out. That's it. That's what a washroom is for. Basics. Just the bare minimum.
Is there a length of time? A minimum length of time?
You know what? I'll bring my child in and I'll bathe him in the sink that we all use. Is that cool too?
No.
Come on.
That's kind of gross. Yeah. But I mean, we're talking like fecal matter when it comes to that. A guy washing his face is acceptable, in my opinion. Dousing his head with water, like I said, depending on the length of hair.
Yeah, it's got to walk out of here like dripping and... I was confused.
All right.
What's something weird you saw this week? Tell me.
Something weird I saw.
How's downtown living in general? Are there any big revelations you found now living downtown? Any eye-opening experiences that the life of Scarborough didn't necessarily prepare you for in this wilderness of the downtown core?
Honestly, not really.
You know what I'm dreading? Is next July, the Pan Am Games are coming here.
Yeah.
For over a week.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be bedlam here.
Why? It's not like it's the Olympics. It's not that big of a deal.
There are going to be showers going on from washroom to washroom.
Probably, yeah. My dad...
With athletes who are sweating all over the place.
My dad, for some reason, he got really excited about these Pan Am Games.
Really?
And so he asked me to... He was on me.
Start like, train?
No. He was on me like way before tickets went on sale to buy tickets for the pre and post ceremonies. That's all he wanted to watch. He doesn't care about any of the events, but he just really wanted tickets to the pre and post ceremonies. And I don't think he's into sports at all. He just like really wants to see, like, you know, old people, especially like old people from foreign countries. They love like grand spectacles and like, I don't know, big floats and shit like that.
Does he go to the Santa Claus parade every year?
Actually, no, he doesn't.
It's a very big spectacle.
It's true. True.
He can go with me next year. I'll go with your dad.
Okay. Yeah, you guys should go by yourselves and you let me know how it went.
We'll review it next year.
It's fine.
Santa Claus parade.
Yeah. I don't know if he'd be into that.
You can stay home and watch it and take notes.
Why?
Notes on floats.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I won't be doing that. But, yeah, so I ended up buying some tickets for him.
Wow.
He's very excited.
Wow. So these are just the opening and closing ceremonies he'll be attending. Yeah. You're not going to check out any of the actual events?
No, I don't think he really cares.
So interesting.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's just the pomp and circumstance rather than the actual substance of the games.
He would buy a ticket probably to the Super Bowl to watch the halftime show and then just...
Wow. That's coming up in a few weeks, the Super Bowl.
I know.
I will be watching.
No? You boycotted it?
I never started. I've never been
into
football.
Didn't you at least watch the halftime show?
I've watched games in the past.
Katy Perry this year or something?
Katy Perry is playing this year. That doesn't draw me. I never, even when I was younger and I was just like your dad. I got into the spectacle of the Super Bowl. Yeah. I wouldn't watch any games all year, but I'd watch the Super Bowl. And what I actually enjoyed most was just the coverage would start at like 11 in the morning or something. Like 7 hours of just talking about this game that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I always enjoyed that. I would put that stuff on and just have it on my TV all day. The game starts and I was out of it.
Yeah.
I didn't care. I cared all about the promotion and just all the sizzle. And then the game came, could care less.
It really is. Yeah, I'm kind of like you because I never got into football, as you know, we'll discuss on this show.
Great tie-in.
But it's really amazing how big of a global event it seems, at least in North America. Probably not the rest of the world, but if you watch any American TV, it really makes it seem like it's the biggest night of the year.
It is. I think last year's game had over 100 million people, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane.
It is kind of insane. 100 million, yeah. I always like to tune in the day after to see what commercials were big hits. I mean,
yeah, that's still something we don't get in Canada.
No.
So
you figure with all this piracy and like, you know, the VPN, the IP blocking things, we get that.
It's tough to in Canada. We really got to just slog it out, man. We got this horrible weather for months of the year.
Yeah.
We got to deal with wrestling shows that don't air here that we have to go to alternative means to find. We don't get the network on the internet. Man, it sucks. No Olympics. Here are the Pan Am Games.
And like, come on, like coins, all these coins, you know?
Christ.
Like making my wallet all just heavy with coins instead of these bills. We're really like a third world country.
You know, it was so funny last week watching the UFC Embedded, and they brought Jose Aldo up to Boston. Of course, it's freezing in Boston. The man lives in Brazil. And he gets out of the van, and here is one of the toughest men in the world, the best featherweight in the world. And he's just yelling about how cold it is. Ah! It's like, this is the stuff we bear every day, just walking outside in this frigid cold, and your body just, of course, you walk out and it's freezing, and you just got to adapt to it because you have to put up with it.
You're saying you can
build character.
Are you saying you can defeat Jose Aldo?
What I'm saying is CM Punk will be more than ready because he was born in Chicago and not in Brazil.
Okay.
He's had to deal with inclement weather in Chicago, the windy city.
Yeah, he's been training his whole life.
So there you go.
From that wind.
The X factors. Yeah. Growing up in cold weather. He was born in Bermuda.
Should be a key.
Or Orlando. I don't know if he could pull this off, but Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And he's staying there. He's training in Milwaukee.
Crazy training conditions. Chicago? Wow.
I'm just saying, if in 5 years this man's the champion, you heard it here first.
All right.
Those Chicago roots. Ugh. A bunch of sissies competed in Tampa, Florida at the Sun Dome. I'm sure it was very hot.
The Sun Dome, Tampa, Florida.
At the University of Southern Florida, of South Florida, somewhere. The USF Sun Dome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Wei, some people make fun of my recollection of dates. And I believe I can trace it all back to this event, how my date system began.
Really? What? How's that?
I would have been 10 years old at this time. And I remember, I started thinking about this as I was watching this show, because it was this event where they announced that the Royal Rumble will be on Sunday, January the 22nd. And I remember as a 10-year-old thinking, wait a minute, that was the date of the prior year's Royal Rumble, which was on a Saturday.
Hmm.
And that, I think, was the first time I took these threads of how, well, if something's on this date this year, it can't be on the exact same day of the week next year.
Wow.
And then I gave it further thought that, you know, if I'd grown up just watching baseball, for instance, it's just the next game is tomorrow or Friday night or Saturday night. But in wrestling, what did they always promote? It was the date coming up next month, January 22nd, the Royal Rumble. They would hit these dates hard into your head and cement them. And cement them they did.
Yes, wow, that's impressive.
So we had a Sunday night pay-per-view in 1995.
I still don't understand how you're able to calculate dates and the corresponding day of the week. How do you do that?
It's a trick, Wei. It's a trick and a curse.
All right.
What are you looking
at? Let me. Can I just test that one more time?
All right.
I'm just going to make up a date, okay? Let me think.
Go somewhere in the 90s.
Okay. October 21st, 1995.
October 21st?
1995.
I'm going to say Saturday.
Okay. Well, that was really fast. And you're right.
Wow.
How do you do that?
You had this look on your face. I thought I got it wrong.
You're faster than Google. How do you do that?
Wait, I've got a chip.
Come on, just tell us.
I was born a robot.
It's
the cold weather, Wei. It's the cold weather.
I just need to know.
I grew up in cold weather.
Like, John doesn't have a calculator in front of him or anything. He just, he could do this on the spot. You should, did you work at, the fair growing up? And was this, the trick? That you know some carny trick?
I don't know any carny trick. Dude, this is, listen.
You
a It's
reader?
A very impressive party trick. I scared my wife's family on Christmas Eve. We were all having dinner, and we started talking about James Brown.
Yeah.
And they were bringing up the fact of when he died. And I said, yeah, I believe I said he died on Christmas Day. And they were like, wait a minute, on Christmas Day? And then they further went, and I pointed out the day of the week he died. And they looked it up. And it was not the reaction you gave me. It was more a silence of, what is this thing in front of us?
And
so it's a great trick to pull off on people. There is zero value in this outside of, wow, that's cool and kind of weird. I can never make a penny off of this trick. I would much rather something like I could pick lottery numbers. That would be a great gift to have. If I was a fortune teller, if I could look into the future, that would be way more impressive than remembering things from the past. Computers have made my trick obsolete.
Unfortunately.
I was born in the 1800s,
you could predict.
I probably would have become prime minister.
You'd be like a great creator of calendars. Like, you'd be the guy who they would go to make
what calendars? They would come to me.
That's right.
I would prevent calendars from even being a thing.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's amazing.
But I was born in the wrong century.
Someday I hope you reveal the secret.
I don't have a secret, Wei. I just can remember this stuff.
No,
I can remember
can't.
Key events around certain dates.
Okay, well, then tell me your thought process for October 21st, 1995. How did you arrive to Saturday from that date?
That one, it's just simple. It's October.
Yeah.
1995.
Yeah.
It would have been the year that the Atlanta Braves won the World Series.
Okay.
You figure out the day they won, you go back.
Shut the fuck up, man. How do you actually do
it? Look this up. Look this up. Atlanta Braves.
Is that actually how... What day did they win the World Series? You don't know. Come on.
I do know.
Just tell us the secret.
Game 6 was October the 28th.
Now you're looking it up.
It was October the 28th of 95.
And what day was that?
Well, we kind of figured that out. That would have been the following Saturday. 21st, 28th. 7 days.
So do you actually have that memorized? The date that they won the World Series?
Wait, you just remember key things. That's all you have to do.
This is so bizarre. So weird. And I don't know why you're keeping it a secret.
I'm not keeping it a secret. I'm giving you my...
Share your gift. Share your gift with the world. Don't
wait,
you want
that's
everybody
literally
to,
it.
To have this
I
ability?
Can remember certain things. Listen, if you were to tell me... I'm not foolproof to this. If there's not
okay,
something
fine.
Key around it, I probably
can
won't
I,
get it right.
Fine. What about... Can you do his history? How about October 21st?
No, if you go too far back, there's no way. If I didn't live through it, I'm not going to remember it.
So I can't tell you 1980, for instance.
I wasn't alive. So I have nothing to base that around. I need to...
That's
need...
weird. Okay, what about October 20th, 1991?
I'm not going to get that either. Because I was like 5, 6. I'm not even...
So you actually remember like events surrounding that? Okay. October 20th.
Give me something where I'm like 15, 16 years
fine.
Old.
October,
when I was
October 20th, 2002.
Sunday.
And and how did you...
That was an easy one, actually.
How did you... correct again, by the way. But how did you get that?
We just reviewed No Mercy, which was on that day.
Holy shit, man. I can't. It's amazing that you even remember.
We just reviewed that
yeah,
like within the past
I
month.
I don't even remember reviewing that episode. And it's amazing that not only do you remember the show, but you remember the date of the show. Like, that's fucking crazy. Like, you're special, man. You're special. You have a gift.
You say that very condescendingly.
No, I'm not. I'm
and
not.
I'll take it as a compliment, even though I know it's meant as a half and half.
I don't mean that. I really don't. I really mean it. Like you really do have like, you're the perfect person for this job.
Listen, you can look at this as nuts. When you were getting ready for your first tournament and you showed me that chart of submissions and options from it, that was incredible.
No, it's not.
You had like a web of just, okay, guy goes for takedown, and it went to, like, it was like choose your own adventure, essentially. It was an incredible-looking chart, and I don't find it that much different.
See, I don't know. That I feel like that something like that is just, like, writing down everything that you know,
you,
one thing flows to
the
another,
practice but. Of what you are doing when you are rolling, if you are thinking like that chart is the exact same thing my brain is doing when you give me a date like that. It's very different. One is mental, the other is physical, but your brain is doing the same activity, and... connecting the dots.
Right. Okay. Well, that's very well explained. I still think it's quite amazing. So
you can say anything you want right now because we don't have one listener left. We've lost them all.
Everybody really wants to know the secret to your powers.
Well, you know what? It was written in a book I once gave Ryback.
Oh.
All right. Let's get into this because people want to hear us talk about wrestling and not about our brains. Sunday, January the 22nd. It was a Sunday. The Royal Rumble. My frequent question. Were you watching as a 10-year-old here?
Yeah, I believe I was.
Did you have your illegal box set up for this Rumble?
Of course.
And was the Rumble an exciting event for you as a child?
Yeah, always. I mean, we didn't really have many pay-per-views back then.
No, these were... Well, 95 was the year they finally moved to 12 a year. But yeah, at this point, 94, you would have had, yeah, 4 pay-per-views.
Mm-hmm.
Big deal. The Royal Rumble.
Well, especially the Rumble.
Yeah. And 95 was kind of a drop-off point for a lot of people, I think.
It was for a lot of people. But that was like... To me, this was like... I look back most fondly at this era. This was like sort of the era of, you know, my childhood. When Brett was sort of on top and, you know... You had all these misfits, these quang.
There were some goofy characters at this time, as we will be introduced to throughout this show. Was your dad excited about the spectacle of Pamela Anderson at this pay-per-view?
I don't think so. Maybe my brother was. My older brother, perhaps, but no. I mean, the thing is, like, I don't even know if we got Baywatch up here.
Oh, we got Baywatch.
Really?
Oh, I watched it as a kid.
Not at this time, though. Maybe
95, right. I think so. This is like the peak of Baywatch.
We did get however, a Home Improvement.
We did get Home Improvement.
Yeah.
First with Pamela Anderson as the tool girl, and then Heidi would replace her.
Yeah.
She would not go on to much fame and fortune after Home Improvement.
No.
A limo pulls up at the start of the show, and Dink alerts the locker room. And this poor locker room. We talk about Dean Ambrose being made to look like a fool a few weeks ago on Raw. What a locker room where their instructions were, act like you have never seen a woman in person before, as they have to ogle and just drool as Pamela Anderson gets out of the limo. And we cut to this, like, porn-themed saxophone instrumental. Because Pamela Anderson and her breasts have arrived at the Royal Rumble.
Well, I will say, I mean, I really feel like she was probably, in my youth at least, the biggest sex symbol that I can recall.
Number one, I would say.
Yeah, for
especially
sure.
Especially as a Canadian. It's like, look at that woman. She's Canadian.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think they really downplayed that. Part of her is Canadian, at least.
She was the Bret Hart for fans of...
She was like a BC Lions.
Yeah, that's where she, I guess, was first seen.
But but the way they tried to portray her here, it was like, here was God, you know? God.
God with tits.
Yeah, basically. Here's Jesus with boobs. And I thought, even as a 10-year-old, it just felt like a bit of a stretch. Like, what's the big deal? You know?
If you remember, like, they built this whole show around Pamela Anderson would be there.
Yeah.
Like, that was the number one pushed thing of this Rumble, was just Pamela Anderson being there.
Mm-hmm.
And Vince McMahon...
It's not like she was even naked, you know?
No, and nor even teasing that for, like, WrestleMania.
No.
She was just going to walk out and walk back.
Yeah. Just her face.
It was, very limited internet at the time for fans to, I guess, dig deeper.
It's true.
Vince McMahon gave us a Vince McMahon-style open.
Yeah, could you imagine, like, trying this today? Like, this is, like, the most tame thing you could do.
Who would be the equivalent to Pamela Anderson today?
Porn star, maybe. Maybe, like, a gang of porn stars.
A gang?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Like, the whole Brazzers network. You know? But even then, I don't even know, because, like, I think kids are so desensitized these days, you know?
Yeah, I don't know who you would have as a...
Take, like, robots or something.
Vince McMahon does a huge open in Vince McMahon style for the Royal Rumble and is going to call the show with Jerry the King Lawler. And we started off with Razor Ramon and Jeff Jarrett for the Intercontinental title. The Roadie, Road Dog, is in the corner of Jeff Jarrett. Lawler notes how Prince Charles is having a royal pajama party at Buckingham Palace and had invited Lawler to this pajama party, but he had to call the Royal Rumble.
Okay.
Sounds like a party.
Yeah.
Prince Charles.
In Buckingham Palace.
Jarrett says that he is going off to Broadway, and Lawler refers to him as the Phantom of the Grand Ole Opry. Terrible joke, but Vince McMahon loved this joke. Like, just loved it. And this told me a lot about, for those that have thought, man, how has Jerry Lawler just lasted all these years on Raw? I think Vince McMahon loves Jerry Lawler. I think he finds him hilarious.
This was a very different Jerry Lawler, though. Like, I mean, I could actually appreciate the...
Oh, this was, heel Jerry Lawler, who was very much on top of his game, not so much the caricature of himself. A very effective announcer in 1995, but I think some of these jokes that Vince McMahon, there's no way this guy was just that good at selling someone's horrible humor, which is something that has been a consistency of Jerry Lawler among the years. And I think Vince, just honest to God, thinks this guy is a stand-up comedian that we were able to steal.
Maybe.
We got this guy.
Maybe.
Every Monday. Jarrett gets the slight advantage at the start of the match. McMahon notes how Lawrence Taylor is here in the crowd and was invited to the Royal Rumble by Diesel as a precursor. Big reaction as Ramon gets a backslide for a two count. Vince McMahon Never has there been an announcer that could sell near falls like Vince McMahon. The world was about to change, but then the man kicked out. Ramon pulls Jarrett crotch first into the post for a huge pop. It was really something to hear this crowd, how they would just react to the most basic of things that, you know, I think somewhat today's audience is very much desensitized where you got to do all these near falls to get these kinds of reactions. And watching a match like this where something as simple as pulling a guy's dick into the steel post would elicit a roar from this crowd.
Especially with this match, I felt, where, you know, it really was a pretty slowly paced match.
Very much so.
Really basic offense. But I think what really stood out was their timing and ability to work this crowd with very minimal movements. And, you know, I feel like, I think, like, Scott Hall at this point in his career was in great shape and a very capable wrestler. And I think Jarrett too, has always been quite underrated.
At the 11:47 mark, they call for the bell after the roadie clips the knee of Razor Ramon, and he's selling the knee huge on the floor, and we assume it's just going to be a count-out victory for Jeff Jarrett when he gets on the microphone and proceeds to call Razor Ramon a coward, saying he wears yellow gear, yellow boots, he might as well put a yellow line down his back, and then starts chanting, chicken, chicken, chicken. And these chants just got under the skin of one Scott Hall.
Mm-hmm.
You can call the man many things. A chicken will not be one of them. So Razor Ramon, against doctor's orders, returns to the ring, and the match is restarted. There is a weak schoolboy attempt by Ramon. Jarrett then goes after the knee, drives it into the mat. He applies the figure four, and Ramon will not give up, finally breaks it with punches. Ramon starts a comeback, hits a back suplex off the top. Both turn over. Ramon gets on top for a two count. Then he calls for the Razor's Edge. And he lifts up Jarrett, the knee gives out, and Jeff Jarrett small packages Ramon for the win. This went about 6 minutes and change after the restart. I just like the way that the knee played into the finish. Mm-hmm. It was so simple, and there's nothing that drives me more insane when a guy has a body part worked over, and then he makes the comeback, and he's magically healed. Like, he goes for a, he's selling his knee, and then he's going to go for a frog splash. Yeah. I just liked how that knee clip totally changed the complexion of the match.
I think you should remember that for a later match.
I will, sure. Yes.
But yeah, same here. I thought, you know, I actually really liked the finish, you know. I thought a lot of this was just really good in-ring storytelling with the leg, and I thought Jarrett was very good, and I thought Hall was very good. And I even thought Vince did a good job on commentary.
Someone who was not good on this show.
Well, by the way, I mean, isn't it Jarrett is now stablemates with Scott Hall's son.
That's right. There, him and his son are part of the Bullet Club.
It's amazing that Jeff Jarrett is still wrestling. You know, when you look at this show and all the
20 years ago,
a lot of his peers are, you know, I mean, no longer wrestling or, you know,
not with us.
Not with us, exactly.
Stephanie Wyand is in the back. Uh-huh. A woman I never need to recall. She simply throws to Todd Pettengill, who does the exact same job that Stephanie does, only better than Stephanie. And Todd is in the dressing room of Pamela Anderson with all these gifts that the WWF talent has provided, including sardines from the Bushwhackers, Lex Luger sending a T-shirt, the British Bulldog sending a stuffed animal. And then we got this awkward back and forth between Todd Pettengill and Pamela Anderson.
Picture from Shawn Michaels of himself. How typical. How about my gift? Did you get that, Pam?
Yeah, I did. It's around here somewhere.
The big horseshoe roses.
Yeah,
can I see it?
Nice thought. It was nice.
Can I see it?
Okay.
Yeah.
It's oops. The price tag's still on it.
No, that's not what I sent. I sent a big
The thought that counts. It's really, really beautiful.
Would you like a piece of candy?
I try not to touch the stuff.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm dropping. Let's go back to Stephanie.
Which would be, I guess, enough of a icebreaker for Pamela Anderson that later on in the show she would feel comfortable taking her clothes off in front of Todd Pettengill while he just sat there and watched.
And the cameras, I guess.
She was very liberating with her body and who could be around as she just walked around in her natural state.
Yeah. But then, you know, like, if there's something we know about Pamela Anderson, it's that we know that she's not attracted to muscular dudes, like pro wrestler types. It's just not her type. This is a woman who dated Kid Rock.
Tommy Lee. Time.
Yeah. And who else? Bret Michaels?
Didn't she dated Alexander Daigle of the Ottawa Senators.
Oh, is that right?
A washout number one overall pick.
Wow. Okay.
So, another.
Good for him.
I guess a hockey tie-in for Pamela Anderson.
And that's it, right? I can't think of many others.
I'm sure there were others. Then we go from there back to Stephanie Wyan, who is with new Intercontinental Champion Razor Ramon, before she corrects herself and identifies Jeff Jarrett by his actual name. And Jarrett says that Pamela Sue wants to see him. That was also the gimmick of every heel on this show, was that they were going to score with Pamela Anderson.
Yeah. Or at least see her.
See how far they could get.
We're going to go steady.
IRS and The Undertaker were next. IRS, accompanied by Ted DiBiase, who informs everyone that you will never rest in peace until you pay your taxes. They plug The Undertaker appearing at a monster truck rally the night prior in front of 60,000 people. So this was not the biggest crowd Taker even performed in front of this weekend. I would love to have seen Undertaker at this stage in 1995 in character attending a monster truck rally as The Undertaker. That would have been something.
He's also billed here as 6'10". Well, how tall is that?
That's just under 7 feet.
I mean, what do you think his legit height is?
Well, the guy's definitely shrunk over the years. I don't think he was ever 6'10", but that guy, I believe, has had some spinal compression and has certainly...
That's to be expected.
That happens. You live that kind of a lifestyle and get thrown around for as many years as he has. It's going to impact your back.
Yeah.
Big man. Taker no-sold this drop kick from behind as IRS then flees to the floor. He later goes after Paul Bearer, and Taker goes after him. They go back into the ring. He hits a big boot, throws IRS by his tie, and then scales the top rope for what would be, I guess, current school. Then the Druids came down. Taker goes for the old school again, and one of the Druids shakes the ropes, and IRS gets thrown off the top. Taker lands on his feet, I'm very confused here. What were the Druids doing here?
Just trying to attack him.
They were trying to attack the Undertaker?
Yeah.
Gosh.
The Druids were...
I'm not going to lie. I watched this a week ago. I have no recollection of this match.
They were under DiBiase's control.
That's right. That's right. So they tried to shake the ropes, and Taker was thrown off. And then they sent Taker into the steps. The Druids started stomping on him. And Lawler says... that the Undertaker's obliques are being worked over, unlike the obese Paul Bearer, whose blood type is Ragu. I just thought that was a good line. His blood type is Ragu. The referee gets distracted, and they place IRS onto a prone Undertaker, who sits up to end the count, sends IRS into the Druid on the apron, goes for a tombstone. Both Druids get on the apron. They get kicked off. Irwin then comes off, hits a flying clothesline, but Taker pops up, hits a choke slam, and he pins IRS at 12 minutes and 20 seconds of a largely forgettable match of Undertaker against IRS.
It was a pretty boring match, as were many of the Undertaker's matches from this point in his career. It's no wonder, though, when you realize that, you know, you're watching a man play fighting a zombie. You know, and that's really all his style was in a lot of these earlier matches, was walk slowly and don't sell. And, you know, it doesn't really allow for much room for interesting technical wrestling. But yeah. I guess it kind of shows the strength of the character, the fact he's just lasted this long without having many good matches.
Well, you know, you had to get through the IRS match before you could really get the payoff of what the big WrestleMania program is going to be. Because then the Druids attack the Undertaker after the match, and he fights them all off, and King Kong Bundy enters the ring. They have a big stare down. IRS attacks Paul Bearer, steals the urn, and Bundy attacks Taker, hits the avalanche in the corner, and Taker cannot rise up because the power of the urn has been repossessed by IRS, and he gets splashed in the middle of the ring, and that is your big match to look forward to at WrestleMania. The Undertaker and King Kong Bundy, as Taker would add another notch to those first half of the streak.
Yeah.
The streak being built. This was the foundation of the streak.
Yeah.
Giant Gonzalez, King Kong Bundy.
Yeah, not a very worthy streak at that point.
Todd Pettengill is with Diesel from earlier tonight. Referred to him as D's. What up, D's? Todd Pettengill, the least hit man that was ever employed by the WWE. He noted how earlier today, D's was laid back reading the funny pages, the comics. But now D's doesn't have time to talk to T's about the... I have no idea. This was just hilarity. Saw a lot of parallels here with Roman Reigns.
Oh, yeah, Diesel? Absolutely.
Like, Roman Reigns is, like, where Diesel was in 94, 95. In, like, almost the exact same role.
And more so than that, I feel like Roman Reigns would be Diesel in 95 if they decided to give him the title this year and let him keep it for one whole year. I mean, and we're not just talking about the goatee, the long, wet, black hair.
Yeah, they do have a bit of a similarity to themselves.
Yeah.
Then we go to Pettengill. Oh, this was awesome. With Bret Hart earlier. And this felt like this was Bret Hart legitimately wanting no part of this. All Bret has thought about, he says, since losing the title at Survivor Series is winning it back. He says he likes Diesel, but this is war. And then he just puts his hand up to Todd, and in the greatest dismissal of an interviewer.
If everything's if, you know, I'll cross that road when I get to it, okay? Can I... I gotta think. Okay. All right, fine.
He just says, good night, and shoos Todd Pettengill away. Enough. Get away. Good night. This was great.
I always like these backstage Bret Hart interviews. I mean, you know.
God, the more I go back and watch Bret, the more I enjoy this guy as a promo.
Dude.
He got so much flack for not being charismatic, and that's because they always compared him to
Hulk Hogan's. Dude.
Exactly. He's... And this, Bret was so perfect for Bret Hart.
Yeah. He just like, he always spoke like it was very real. He spoke like an athlete. No shouting, nothing overly flashy. He just, you know, like in a skit like this, he just seemed like somebody who was preoccupied, like he had a lot on his mind before a match. And that was way more believable.
The current main roster, they desperately need a guy like this who's just, it's not about the jokes and these monologue promos. He's just a guy.
You're not always on.
Exactly.
Know what I mean?
He's just... an athlete. That's it. I really just enjoyed Bret Hart. And this was like a 1 minute deal, and it was great. It was.
He wasn't even looking at the camera. Like, it was just like he was so busy. He was like doing his tape and stuff.
Good night. So Diesel and Bret were next for the WWF title. Of course, just a while back, we reviewed their third big pay-per-view match, which was at the Survivor Series later that year. They had previously fought at the King of the Ring the prior year when Bret was the champ. Now it was the role reversal with Diesel winning the title back in November over Bob Backlund. They did it at a house show. 8 seconds, Diesel wins the title, and now defending it in his first pay-per-view defense against Bret Hart. And Diesel comes down to the ring, shakes hands with Lawrence Taylor at ringside. Just keeping that in everyone's the back of your mind that Lawrence Taylor is there. And Diesel puts his fist out and Hart just knocks the fist away rather than just touching gloves.
Oh,
not quite giving him the finger like Conor McGregor and Dennis Siver. But Hart worked to take him down and then just went after the left knee of Diesel. And Bret would proceed to work this whole match as a heel, essentially. He would take all these shortcuts. He would do everything within the rules, but very much bending them in order to get any advantage he could over this guy.
I was a little confused about the heel babyface dynamic here because, I mean, I knew Bret was a babyface, but Diesel was getting booed too.
Listen, this is just me guessing, but I think that they really anticipated that the crowd was going to pick Bret over Diesel. Mm. And they went with this idea of Bret doing whatever he could to win the title and hopefully trying to turn the crowd so that they didn't all just gravitate towards Bret, who was the guy that had been the top guy prior to Diesel and that they would side with, as opposed to Diesel, who had just turned. And much like the problems Roman... Imagine if Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan were to have a singles match right now mm-hmm. at the Rumble. And it would be the same dynamic, I think.
See, but, you know, I totally understand that the logic, but it... To me, like, as a Bret Hart fan, I didn't even really look at him as a heel here. I just looked at it like a man here who was desperate to win this match, and, you know.
And that's how I think the crowd took it, too. Like, they were not
in the
turning on Bret. Yeah. It really wasn't until he used the chair that you heard some boos later on in the match. But
it came across as strategy instead of cowardice.
Right. So he would be he wouldn't be releasing on the count. He would hold it right until the end. Hart hit the suicide dive, and then Diesel reversed an Irish whip, sending Hart into the steps after Bret had taken the first few minutes of the match. Diesel incorporated the San Martino style backbreaker that Hart broke out of.
And this is where I had an issue, because Bret spent the first half of this match working on Diesel's leg, and when it came time for Diesel to have his offense, it was just big boots, you know, like that Canadian backbreaker rack that puts all the weight on the leg. Just really no mention or no selling of that leg at all. And contrast that to Scott Hall, who earlier in the night I thought did a much better job.
Well, that's because Diesel is not on gas. He's on diesel power.
Okay.
It's more effective.
Right.
He's Superman. Diesel hits a jackknife. And Shawn Michaels and Owen Hart run in and start attacking Diesel and his left knee. But, it's just Shawn Michaels who runs in by himself. Hart's down, and Shawn runs in attacking Diesel and his left knee. And Earl Hebner doesn't call for the bell and then goes to Howard Finkel and announces that the match will continue. I like the fact that they at least called it out, but... the idea was that... It was very inconsistent, as we would see later on, of here's a big title match. They don't want to end it in a DQ, even though what we just saw was clear grounds for a DQ, right in front of the ref.
Sure.
I appreciate them at least calling it out, rather than the typical, the ref just didn't see all this happen and just ignores it. Hart goes back to working on the knee, gets another figure four applied. Vince McMahon accidentally referred to Diesel as Big Daddy Tool. And before correcting himself, Diesel then punches the ribs of Bret to break the hold. Hart wraps the leg around the post. Vince is calling for a DQ here as Hart is bending the rules. And this is when he attacks the knee with a chair. And the fans start booing this. And Vince just starts saying, oh, I think he missed. I don't think he hit the knee. He just thought, no, he didn't hit him. Even though we all saw plain as day him just wind up and attack the knee.
Mm-hmm.
So then Hart applies the sharpshooter, and this time Owen Hart runs in attacking Bret. He takes the turnbuckle pad off, throws Bret into the exposed turnbuckle chest first. Both are downselling, and again Howard Finkel announces that the match must continue.
He's just letting everything go.
So Diesel crawls on top for a near fall. Bret gets up, stomps the knee, runs his face into the exposed buckle, and is just attacking him with strikes. Hart then is dangling on the rope as Diesel gets a chair, but this time Hart escapes. Also, one part we missed earlier was when Diesel had his legs wrapped around the post, Bret took his wrist tape mm-hmm. and taped them around the legs of Diesel to tape him around the post.
Yeah. Yeah, just more like kind of heel-like shenanigans, you know, just to show that this was a different mentality for Bret Hart.
Hart also did a spot which would end up being the big finish for their Survivor Series showdown later that year, where Hart plays possum as if he's out, and Diesel goes to lift him up, and Hart gets a small package for a great near fall. And then as he goes for a roll-up, he runs Diesel into Earl Hebner, and this prompts Michaels, Owen, Jeff Jarrett, the Roadie, and Bob Backlund all to run in. They're attacking both men, and finally the bell is called. 27 minutes, 6 seconds. They rule the match a draw, and Bob Backlund would apply the chicken wing onto Bret Hart. The others attacked Diesel, and eventually Diesel fought them off, and lastly stopping Backlund with the chicken wing applied, clears the ring with Hart laying in the middle. He would help Bret up. They would shake hands and hug just to tell the crowd these are both baby faces, and that would end the match.
Mm-hmm. on paper, certainly a very overbooked match that I don't think was really meant to ever sort of be the definitive end to the feud.
It was more to set up Mania programs for both guys.
But, you know, finish aside, I really liked this match. I thought there was a lot of drama and some very good technical wrestling here. And, you know, despite all the chaos, I thought there was some order within it all, because there's like a balance at least between the two men's disadvantages. You had run-ins for on both sides. I thought Nash did a good job despite the lack of some
27-minute match for Nash, which, if I'm not mistaken, would be the longest match of his career that wasn't a battle royal.
Really? Wow. And Brett, I mean, geez, like, what can you really say? To me, I mean, you know, I'm a mark, so I can't really... I almost feel like I'm a little biased, but you can't... I can't help but not watch this match and, like, not look at him like he's the greatest wrestler of all time. You know, just even something as basic as, you know, using the figure four as a rest spot, but it never feeling like a rest spot because of his facial mannerisms and because of the aggression it looked like he was putting in to this. Like, think about it. When you're applying a hold in jiu-jitsu, like, if you get a submission hold in, you're fighting for your life to lock that thing in there. You're not just sitting there resting, you know, taking a breath and relaxing. Like, you're tense because you feel like you won't get this chance again. You worked really hard for it. And that's the sense I got from, you know, Brett just even doing the setup to the sharpshooter, which in this case was a figure four.
I enjoyed the match a lot. I thought Brett did a fantastic job. I thought Diesel was able to carry his own in this, but this was a masterful match laid out by Bret Hart. I think the Survivor Series match was a bit better than the two had that we recently reviewed. But, man, to go out 27 minutes, you're Bret Hart with Kevin Nash.
Mm-hmm.
That's a hell of a task, even in 1995. And I really enjoyed the match. It did set up the programs for Mania. And it left it open to eventually come back to this, which they eventually would, with Bret then beating Diesel for the title later that year.
It set up portions of the Rumble, too.
That's true, and we will get to that. Of course, the Mania program that Brett would get that year would be Bob Backlund in a submission match. Not the most enticing, but that's the direction they went. This is when Pettengill was in Pamela's dressing room, and she is getting changed, and while naked, she needed her purse. And Todd was there to hand the purse to Pamela Anderson behind a screen that she was changing behind. Yeah. Riveting.
Cute.
Stephanie Wyand is with the 1-2-3 Kid and Bob Holly, the Cinderella story of the tag title tournament. After Diesel and Shawn Michaels broke up, they vacated their tag titles, set up the tournament, and now Holly compares themselves to the San Diego Chargers, who have made it to the Super Bowl as the underdogs. I believe the charisma level amongst these three on screen was about zero.
Well, I'm here with the 1-2-3 Kid and Bob Sparkplug Holly. It's the Cinderella story. You two weren't even supposed to be in the semifinals. You replaced the Smoking Guns. You get your big shot tonight. You have to be elated. What's going on in your mind?
You know, that's right, Stephanie. You know, this is a big opportunity for us. We're so excited and we're so nervous. You know, we've made it this far. We've got two matches down and we got one more to go. Right, Bob?
That's right. You know, we're just like the San Diego Chargers.
Right.
They're getting their chance at the Super Bowl, and now we're getting ours in just a few moments tonight.
You sure are, and I want to wish both of you the best of luck as you step into the ring. Let's go back to you.
Thanks,
Vince.
Stephanie.
Yeah, Walton, man, at this point was just... I don't think he's ever been a great promo, but like as the 1-2-3 Kid generic babyface, he's just so boring and awful. And Holly, obviously, not much better. Both just such generic baby faces.
In the biggest failure of the night, Jerry Lawler had this toy called the Royal Magistrator, where he shows a screenshot of Pamela Anderson arriving with the locker room watching her and tried to draw himself giving her a kiss. This looked terrible, and it just was a...
It didn't work. It worked part way through, or he didn't have time or something. And it's a shame because I actually like remember a lot of these Magistrator segments. And for people who never saw it, it's essentially what, like, if you watch football games, like they have a little, they'd freeze frame a shot, and then you'd have like a the analysts use a pen to draw on screen to draw the plays. And what Lawler would do, he would always freeze frame a scene from the match, and he'd draw a picture over it. Like once you had Mabel deliver a dropkick, and then he's drawing something over top of it, and you'd realize later that he turned Mabel into like a he drew a whale on top of Mabel. Like it would be like funny shit like that. This one though, even in concept, even if he did get it to work, I don't think would have been that good.
I always remember one. It was a Saturday night's main event, and Bret Hart beat Papa Shango with a sharpshooter. And Bobby Heenan breaks down the finish, and he's just ragging on Bret. And as he says, well, he goes from this point over to here, and he spells out the word best. And yeah. Gorilla's like, see, you do think he's the best. No, no, no. And he just gets so livid at what he has just done. I love it. Yeah. Bobby Heenan, the best. Bam Bam Bigelow and Tatanka with Ted DiBiase took on the charismatic duo of the 1-2-3 Kid and Bob Holly. Vacant tag titles with the winning team set to defend them against the Smoking Guns the next night on Raw. And McMahon notes that Bart Gunn was injured in a rodeo tournament, but the Smoking Guns will return tomorrow night.
He was in the Rumble.
Billy was, not Bart.
Bart wasn't in?
He was in the Rumble. Yeah. Well, quick turnaround, I guess. Lawler corrects Vince that Bigelow beat Holly last week after Vince went over their matches from the prior week. And Vince just dismisses this correction by saying, yeah, he squashed him. Moved on. They got the heat on the heels early on. Bigelow hit this big press into the air, and Kid came down into a Hurricane Rana. But then they went right back to beating down the 1-2-3 Kid. Sean Waltman, I mean, his in-ring was pretty incredible for 1995 WWF at the time.
Mm-hmm.
He was the king of what a maneuvers.
Definitely. Yeah, in this era, in this roster, I think he definitely stood out as, you know, the guy most well-known for that high-flying style. But quickly, later on in the late 90s, people would pretty much catch up to him.
Holly would come in and is just getting beaten down and beaten down. Lawler says that Holly, of course the race car driver at this point, needs some jumper cables because he's out of juice. Kid tries to save and accidentally elbow drops his partner. It's typical a heel spot, but we had the baby faces looking like goofs here. Tatanka comes off the top and chops Bigelow when Holly moves, and Holly goes for the tag, but the 1-2-3 Kid has left his position to go after Tatanka. Holly, I would think, would just be pissed by this point. This guy elbow drops me. He's not in the corner. Then there was some form of a standing drop kick by Bam Bam Bigelow that did not connect on any level. Holly crawls. He goes to tag Tatanka, not realizing where he is. So then the 1-2-3 Kid comes in. The referee turns around, and this allows them to double-team Holly. 1-2-3 Kid living up to being the worst tag partner in history at this point. Tatanka then drives Holly's head into Bigelow's skull in place of the turnbuckle pad. There's a big chop by Tatanka, where Lawler just instinctively yells, "Woo!" Then there's a double cross body in the middle of the ring, and finally, Holly makes the tag to the 1-2-3 Kid. He comes in, missile drop kick to Bigelow. Tatanka gets drop kicked to the floor, and Waltman hits a somersault dive to the floor that's just identified as a moonsault. And then there was a big gorilla press by Bigelow, sending the 1-2-3 Kid to the floor, came back into the ring, and then Holly sent Tatanka to the floor. Kid rolled over and pinned Bigelow, who had been knocked down by Tatanka coming off the ropes and hitting him by mistake, and pinned him at 15:45, Bigelow taking the pinfall. And the conclusion that Vince McMahon made here was that the Chargers may indeed have a chance at the Super Bowl. They did not. But new tag team champions, the 1-2-3 Kid and Bob Holly.
I thought the match was okay. I mean, I can say that I really wasn't that interested, mainly due to the participants involved, and because I really just, at this point, wanted to see the Rumble. To me, like, it just really felt like a buffer match between the last title match and the Rumble coming up.
You weren't excited here for this big, I'm just looking up here, the tag team titles here. Do you know how long the 1-2-3 Kid and Bob Holly would keep those titles?
A day?
They would lose them the very next night to the Smoking Guns.
Right.
So a great tournament. What a payoff.
Okay.
The Smoking Guns.
Sure.
Win.
Anyway, this match placed after the WWF title match, clearly the big angle was going to come out of this match, where Bigelow, after the match, is still in the ring. He's frustrated about the loss. The crowd is booing him. They're mocking him. He gets upset, and Vince gets ready to throw to the back when all of a sudden he sees Bigelow yelling at Lawrence Taylor at ringside, and they decide to stay with it. Lawrence Taylor goes to shake Bigelow's hand. Bigelow shoves him hard into him and his buddies, and Lawrence Taylor looks pissed. As one of his friends says, he's crazy, that guy.
I always remember that line.
He's crazy, that guy. That guy. That guy? No, that guy. And they go to the back. The crowd is chanting LT. I thought that Lawrence Taylor sold this really well, where he was just furious at what this fucking guy had done, shoving him.
I feel like we've complimented not only Lawrence Taylor, but his entourage in the past. Like when we probably did our WrestleMania review that year. Like this dude who's standing next to him, holding him back, I thought added a lot to, you know.
Well, Bigelow shoved him hard into the buddy. Like, the buddy took the brunt of this.
Yeah, for sure.
This giant Lawrence Taylor getting thrown into you. Mm-hmm. So this got a lot of this was the big angle coming out of the show, a pretty well-remembered angle for WWF viewers. And they cut from this angle to...
Hold on. But did you know who Lawrence Taylor was?
Oh, no. He meant nothing to me when this happened.
No, I mean, really, like, for us outside of America, I mean, it just really didn't
seem
like...
This had been Kelly Gruber, though. Oh, man.
He shoved Kelly Gruber.
Million buys at WrestleMania. A million.
Yeah. You know, so I thought this was interesting, but to me, it really didn't feel like it was worthy of a main event.
But you know what? This crowd chanted for him.
Yeah.
I mean, they were looking for... This was a dead time for the company. They were looking for some outside buzz for WrestleMania. Their roster was not going to provide that. So that was a year where playing the celebrity card worked to their advantage. Mm-hmm. Not that it was, you know, a gigantic move in history. I mean,
no,
Lawrence Taylor.
It was no Mike Tyson.
It wasn't Mike Tyson. Absolutely not.
Bam Bam versus Mike Tyson.
Wow. That would have been
it.
Do you think one of his buddies would have really said, he's crazy, that guy, to Mike Tyson?
We could have also had Steve Austin versus Lawrence Taylor.
Yeah, perhaps.
That could have been the match.
Yeah. They cut to a video of last year's Rumble with Diesel eliminating 7 men and then Shawn Michaels eliminating his best friend. And then we have a Michaels promo saying that he single-handedly eliminated Diesel last year and it will be an easy night for Shawn Michaels tonight. Mm-hmm.
Great cocky heel 90s Shawn promo.
Yes. Yeah. And I love the fact that, you know, the highlights of last year's show were going to play into this year and their WrestleMania main event.
Mm-hmm.
They showed the finish of the prior year's Rumble with Hart and Luger winning at the same time. And then Todd's like, let's see it from a different angle, as if we're going to make a ruling on this 1 year after the fact. But Todd still wanted to get to the bottom of who won last year's
Rumble.
I think
it was worth showing because you really, you know, watching this again.
It was timed great.
Yeah, you really have to admire the precision with which Bret and Lex were able to execute this finish so perfectly. I mean, they really just had that one shot and, you know, even from multiple angles, it works. So it really, I don't think it could have gone any better.
What are you more impressed with? Bret and Luger, who did the double finish and had to plan for it to be the double finish, or Cena and Batista, who it was pure fluke and looked perfect?
Yeah, I think both have their merits. I mean, this one because it was intentional, but
I think it'd be harder to plan it, knowing you're trying to do this, as opposed to Cena and Batista lucking into this spot that they were not planning to do.
But what was impressive about the Batista-Cena finish was the reaction afterwards.
How
they handled it. And I thought, you know...
The margin for error for the Batista-Cena... Like, it so easily could have been seen. One guy clearly got eliminated first.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if Batista, the bigger guy, had been basing and his feet broke the fall holding Cena, that would have messed up your whole match.
Mm-hmm. Really? Yeah, really. So, but as far as, you know, a planned finish, certainly this 94 finish with Bret and Luger was it was perfect.
And kind of the beginning of Luger being, you know, he would still be incorporated into the WrestleMania main event, but it was pretty clear after that Bret was the guy they were going with and Luger was, I mean, look at him this year in 95.
Look at him in this next promo.
His promo is his first line is 1994 is over, which for this guy's career would be bad news. And he then says, history is yesterday's news, which is in fact true. History is yesterday's news. He's sick of being a contender, and he's going to become a champion because 1995 is his year.
He really just like came across like a whiny bitch here.
Yeah. Wouldn't even be in the company by the end of the year. Would be back to WCW.
No.
Then we come back, and this was the part that sold the angle. Vince apologizes for the actions of Bam Bam Bigelow, and he looks pissed and turns his chair with his back to the camera with the most disgusted look on his face. Yeah. I guarantee you, if you were an impressionable fan watching this in 1995, it totally felt like Angle the whole time. But you watch this, and Vince made it seem like he was genuinely pissed that happened on his watch.
Definitely.
The celebrity that he brought in and was disrespected.
I thought Vince treated the whole angle really well. First of all, like just in the build up to the shove, you know, he was always teasing, cutting back to the interview in the back. And then, you know, he sees Bam Bam walk by LT and he makes the call. I think for a mid-90s production, I thought Vince had a lot of foresight into the psychology of the viewer.
It made perfect sense to have this guy as your voice, as the person that knew where everything needed to go. And it made perfect sense to have this guy kind of driving the ship. Mm-hmm. Finkel then welcomes the star of the Royal Rumble, Pamela Anderson, to come sit ringside, to come watch this match. And
she doesn't even speak. She just comes out.
You got to wait for that.
You know, waves. Everybody applaud how hot she is. Let's give her a hand for being really hot.
Well, I'm going to say this. Pamela Anderson came out wearing this evening gown. And they may have been in the Sun Dome, implying it was hot. It appeared to be very cold in the arena for one Pamela Anderson.
Okay, sure.
Then we had the Royal Rumble, which was being promoted as the most fast-paced Royal Rumble in history because we were going to have one-minute intervals.
Oh, right.
Because the talent depth was lacking at this point in time, and we were going to get a much more condensed Rumble this year. The people drawing number one and two were Shawn Michaels and British Bulldog, with Vince McMahon simply writing off Shawn Michaels, saying, you can bet he won't be going to the main event of WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
That Vince McMahon, just man, could he telegraph. Give up on this guy. Not a chance.
He was true, though. Shawn, they didn't main event.
That's true. That's true. Among the Scott Putski candidates on this show, Way, I am putting British Bulldog on that list.
Oh, yeah, deserving.
1995 was, my goodness, was the British Bulldog a heavy set fella.
Mm-hmm.
McMahon says this is going to be the fastest Rumble ever, and we go fast and furious into these entrants. Eli Blue, Duke Drosy, Jimmy Del Rey, the late Jimmy Del Rey, just passed away a few weeks ago, and Sione of the new Head Shrinkers, among the first six out. And quickly we got to see that this was going to be the Shawn Michaels show. He was head and shoulders above everybody else in this match. The near elimination spots, he sold big for everybody. I mean, this was the Shawn Michaels showcase for close to 40 minutes, mm-hmm. I thought. We continue on. Tom Pritchard was in seventh. Doink the Clown in eighth. Interject, Way, if you have any observations, because I had few throughout
no,
this.
No, it was just really guys. I mean, I didn't...
Like,
you,
not a lot of creative spots.
No.
Not any kind of, like, entrances that were very, you know... It's such a well-booked match now where a lot of thought goes into it. I thought very little in this match, outside of the number one and two going all the way through.
And outside of some of the Bret Hart interactions in the middle.
That's right.
But no real surprise entrance either, you know, just pretty straightforward.
Quang was in ninth. 10th was Rick Martel. Then we got our first big kind of angle in the Rumble, with the 11th entrance being Owen Hart. And as he comes out, Brett attacks him on the way to the ring, and the officials have to stop Brett. And as Owen finally gets into the ring, he's immediately thrown out by the British Bulldog. This was interesting for a few reasons. The first being, I mean, Owen was thrust into that match with Diesel and Brett earlier in the match, and of course they had done the big feud with Brett, but they weren't going anywhere with Brett and Owen, and this was a rumble where you were so thin on guys that taking Owen out, I thought, left a big gap in terms of just having a guy that could do anything, and Owen was kind of sacrificed as Brett's revenge, rather than maybe doing something like that with Bob Backlund, for instance, which is where you were going with Brett.
Did they end up doing another match with Brett and Owen afterwards?
I mean, they did house show matches, but they never did.
No program.
No, it was pretty much done.
That's the match I wanted to see more so than Bob Backlund again, but maybe they felt at this point that they had done it too much.
Yeah, I agree. I would have been fine with that submission match at Mania was, I mean, Brett hated that match. And
I would have done it again at Mania, you know? Done another match.
Yeah,
Owen.
I wouldn't have had a problem. The issue was you had. Backlund had beaten Brett at the Survivor Series, and they were doing the, you know, Brett getting the win back.
Yeah, but I mean, like, he was just, like, Bob Backlund was destroyed in, like, 10 seconds, so.
By Diesel.
I felt like all the heat was kind of extinguished, but whatever.
Number 12, this would have been my pick going in if we had our pool back. Timothy Well in.
I was familiar. I had
team named after a form of getting your steak cooked. Mm-hmm. Well done.
Yeah.
Number 13 was Bushwhacker Luke. We should mention here that there was a huge flurry of eliminations. After Owen was thrown out by the Bulldog, we saw Duke Drosy tossed out, Timothy Well gone almost instantly, Pritchard was gone, Martel was gone, Doink, Quang, Eli Blue, just one after the other, just to clear the ring. Bushwhacker Luke came in, instantly eliminated by Shawn Michaels, and then it was down to Michaels and Bulldog after 13 entrants. And Lawler points out how long they have been in the match at this point. This was the 12-minute mark. Not exactly Iron Man at this point in the match. And Vince just says, do you have a stopwatch or something? Number 14, the other half of the Blue Brothers, Jacob Blue.
I didn't realize these were the Harris boys.
Oh, yeah. One of their many, many gimmicks. Mm-hmm. Jacob Blue just runs right into a back body drop as Shawn Michaels eliminates him. King Kong Bundy was 15th. Number 16 was Mo, who just ran in and ran into Bundy, who back body dropped him and was gone in seconds. 17th was Mabel, and we got the big stare down of Mabel and King Kong Bundy. Dream matches, yeah. Way. This is what the Royal Rumble is meant for. Bushwhacker Butch was then in. Mabel is able to get Bundy out and over the top rope to the floor, which was notable in that they were building up Bundy for the Undertaker match at WrestleMania, and Mabel really had nothing until he would win the King of the Ring, but not really anything of substance at this point. Michaels then tosses Butch out. 19th was Lex Luger, another Putski nomination, and this is going to be a classic debate, Luger versus Bulldog in 1995.
You know who I'd also put up there? I think Shawn was looking pretty buff. At this point,
Shawn was and this was also during the drug testing era. Mm-hmm. So maybe extra credit for these guys going to, you know, blood, sweat, and tears. Number 20 was Mantar. This was the awesome. Cream of the crop in 95. Mantar. 21, it just gets better with Aldo Montoya, the Portuguese Man-O-War. 22, Henry Godwin, who is introduced as Vince McMahon stating, there's a favorite for you, Henry Godwin. Lawler then says that Henry Godwin is more popular in Arkansas than Bill Clinton, and Vince McMahon letting his political leanings seep through on the broadcast says, well, I'll give you that one. Siding with the heel pig farmer over the president of the United States of America. Mm-hmm. 23 was Billy Gunn. 24th was the rodeo-impaired Bart Gunn. 25th, Bob Backlund, which prompted Bret Hart to return again, attacking Backlund before he enters, and the officials once again coming out to stop Bret. 26th, Stephen Dunn. Luck of the draw. Backlund staggers in, and Luger just clotheslines Backlund out from behind, and then Bret goes back to attacking Backlund in the aisle. 27th, this was a cool surprise, Dick Murdoch. 48 years old at the time. This was most notable to me that for at least 10 seconds, we got an interaction between Shawn Michaels and Dick Murdoch, which is, if nothing more, a cool trivia note to this Rumble match. Two of the greatest ever.
How did he end up here in this Rumble?
Yeah, just, you know, he was still working indies at this time. This was a year and a half before he passed away and got into the Rumble.
But I mean, of all the potential names, I'm just kind of surprised.
They needed guys badly in this Rumble, so why not Dick Murdoch?
Okay.
28th, Adam Baum, who I would say not quite top tier Putski level on this show, but definitely showing promise in this Rumble match to be in that upper echelon of Putski
winners.
We'll
get there someday.
29 was Fatu, and then Luger eliminated Mantar. Michaels then did this great near elimination spot and continuing to be the star of this match. Drawing number 30 was Crush, and Vince predicts that he is going to clear the ring and go to WrestleMania as Crush then dumps the smoking guns out right away. Stephen Dunn disappeared somewhere around this point. The announcers missed it at first. McMahon says of the men you will see, one of them will go to the main event, and when you looked at who was left here, this was quite the process of elimination that you could do in your head. This is where we got the Michaels-Murdoch interaction. Crush eliminates Adam Baum.
Imagine Dick Murdoch won.
That would have been an awesome main event. Are you kidding me? Kevin Nash and Dick Murdoch? We got to... as Adam Baum is eliminated... We got the most cliche spot where a guy is throwing another guy over the top, turns around to celebrate before the guy hits the floor. Michaels then eliminates Aldo Montoya. Fatu is gone. Godwin and Murdoch go over, but Godwin holds on, eliminating Dick Murdoch from the Royal Rumble.
Shit.
And then we're down to Shawn Michaels, the British Bulldog, Lex Luger, Henry Godwin, and Crush. Luger eliminates Godwin. Luger is the next one out after Michaels shoves him from behind off the turnbuckle. Then Michaels and Crush are double-teaming until Crush kicks him, ducks a bulldog clothesline, and Crush is eliminated. So we're down to numbers 1 and 2 with Michaels and Bulldog as the crowd cheers these men and their stamina. And Michaels did a great job just selling Bulldog's offense huge at this end point of the match. There's a clothesline over the top. Michaels is holding on, and Bulldog just assumes he's going to fall and touch the ground. So he turns around. His music goes off.
Camera zooms in on him as he
celebrates. Michaels is just out of sight, out of mind. And then as Bulldog is celebrating on the second turnbuckle, Michaels comes from behind, knocks Bulldog off. He falls to the floor, and Shawn Michaels is declared the winner at 38 minutes and 45 seconds. Everyone is confused. Howard Finkel announces that only 1 foot touched the floor, and Michaels is therefore the winner. And then, the highlight of the match, the replay. Now, if you were to tell any average performer, you're going to go over the top, tease a kip up, and 1 foot touches the floor, most guys would just do as that describes. Shawn Michaels did the most dramatic dangling, where he only allowed one of his feet to touch the floor and just teased and teased and teased that the other foot would touch and came within millimeters of it touching without actually touching, and then finally grasped onto the apron and got back in. This was an incredible replay.
I completely agree with your sentiment. I mean, I feel like, just like last year, you had one version of a perfect finish and, you know, how precise Brett and Luger were able to land both feet on the floor. You had almost sort of the opposite here in another perfectly executed finish, but this one was a lot more obviously kind of dramatized and almost cartoon-like, but it was done so well and so entertaining, especially when they played the replay in slow-mo. Then you just see, like, Shawn... I mean, obviously a man who's so comfortable with his athletic ability that he you know, just so confident in just making sure that both feet never touch the floor. That itself was a lot of fun to watch. Overall, a fairly dull Rumble, I'd say. Not much in the way of surprises nor, you know, drama. But I thought the finish was done very well.
Great finish to the Royal Rumble. Not one of the better Rumble matches, I think. I thought this was really the Shawn Michaels show. It was not a year where there was a ton of depth, not a lot of creativity throughout this Rumble, but it was a cool showcase of Shawn Michaels and really the start of this guy's elevation into becoming that main event talent. He would win the title a year and a half later and win back-to-back Rumbles, this being his first win. After the match, Shawn Michaels is posing in the ring as Pamela Anderson comes in. And Pamela, we talked about Lawrence Taylor being great in how he sold the shove from Bigelow. Pamela Anderson could not even keep a straight face laughing at this goofball dancing. Yeah. Like he was just the biggest geek.
Yeah, she just
like stomped on this guy's win here.
Yeah.
I thought she like just took the air out of the balloon.
She was just so awkward.
Like, this is so stupid.
And couldn't wait to get out of there.
This white man dancing like a fool.
Yeah, no, I really didn't think she deserved any of the hype going into the show. In fact, I thought Jenny McCarthy seemed way more into it at WrestleMania than she did. She just seemed like she was really above all this, and maybe she was at this time, but I don't know. I just didn't think she added anything.
All right, that was the Rumble from 1995. I'm going to give this show I'm going to say 7 out of 10. I can't say I was too bored with this show. Bad match with Taker and IRS. Not the best Rumble. Enjoyed the title match. Enjoyed Shawn Michaels' performance in the Rumble. This was a good Rumble. Not a great, but not a poor Rumble.
Yeah, I mean, they stuck the landing, and I really like that title match between Bret and Diesel. I give this show 7.5 out of 10.
Is it still fresh in your head from just finishing it?
Yeah, it is.
Wei Ting, he just... it's just watch and then immediately talk about it.
That's how I prefer.
That's good.
Yeah.
See, I watched it so long ago, I forgot stuff.
You have a great memory, though.
Not when it comes to Druids and their involvement in matches. Chris in Ottawa writes in, "Hey, fellas. Wow, the USF Sundome, a venue truly worthy of one of the top three WWF events. Maybe Vince really liked it when they used it for a Saturday night's main event in 1985. This show was not great, but they set up 5 of the 7 matches at WrestleMania 11 during this show, which is commendable, I guess. A great Rumble match, particularly the finish. Shawn carried it, much like Flair did in 92 with an assist from Davey Boy. Show sure wasn't great, though. 5 out of 10, and 2 of those points are thanks to the Roadie, who was a hilarious character, and to Bam Bam and LT, their pull-apart seemed very real when I was a young boy. Song request, 2 options. The top song on the overall charts and the top song on the alternative charts are below. When I Come Around is a great pop song, and some other great hair in the video. The other being Boys to Men on Bended Knee.
Okay. Ronaldo from Milan. In 1995, the WWF shortened the Rumble intervals to 60 seconds. At 15 years old, when Shawn became the new Iron Man, I still smelt bullshit. Diesel and Bret had an epic encounter where Bret, as he described in his book, tried to make a star out of Nash. Too many interferences derailed the path, but it was still a good, very good match. Pamela Anderson couldn't look more bored. Vinnie Mac probably lent her a couple more grands and told her, "You looked like you just found out Tommy Lee isn't that cool, but we'd be glad if you brought the silicone to WrestleMania 2.
Okay, whatever that means. Martin from London. The minute-long intervals were an attempt to hide what was arguably the WWF's weakest ever roster. And to me, it cheapened the achievement of winning from number one for Shawn Michaels. Yeah, this was the first year they ever did the deal where number one went all the way through. It was a cool thing for him to brag about for a while, but then you had Chris Benoit and Rey Mysterio outdoing him by doing the same in the more usual length Rumble matches. I did like a couple of things from the match, the brief appearance of Dick Murdoch and Vince McMahon promising that there will never be two winners ever again, something he made sure of 10 years later at the cost of his quads. Elsewhere on the show, Bret Hart did a great job of trying to make Diesel look like a credible champion, though all the interference took away from things, and watching Diesel here, the Roman Reigns comparisons to this era smack you in the face as you watch. Pamela Anderson looked like she'd rather be anywhere else but Tampa, especially in the Todd Pettengill skits. Once we saw Lawrence Taylor stay out beyond Diesel's match, it was obviously something was up. Bam Bam Bigelow's shove did not age well as an angle starter with a major celebrity. As for the IC title match, someone explained to me why Razor Ramon was dressed as a can of cheddar cheese Pringles. And is there any footage of The Undertaker at that monster truck rally? The 95 Rumble was an average event made memorable by HBK's performance. 6. Anti-KKK Druids out of 10.
Because they're dressed in black, I guess. Brad from Whitby. I watched this show Saturday morning and I kind of felt like a kid again. The first half of the show was very entertaining, right until the horrible finish in the tag match. Then my 31-year-old cynical self showed up and ruined the rest of the show. What the hell was Tatanka doing? I haven't watched a Tatanka match in years, but I never remember him being that big. He was huge. Was he always that big? I know a lot of people remember this Rumble because of Shawn's start-to-finish showing, but in reality, this match was useless. Could have just had a singles match between Shawn and the British Bulldog. So many useless guys in this match, it was one underwhelming appearance after another. Lex easily took the Putski Award for me. When the King started to draw something next to the screen grab of Pam Anderson, I was thinking it was going to be his silhouette. Maybe it would have been different if this was the Attitude Era. 6 out of 10.
We go to Matt in Detroit. With all due respect to the 1999 Rumble, the 95 Rumble may be the worst Rumble pay-per-view of all time. The best moment of the pay-per-view started the card. Mabel and Dink, along with the rest of the roster, ogling Pam Anderson as she arrived. The only good match on the card was Bret and Nash, and that match was pretty bad. Disagree. As for the Rumble itself, 39 minutes and such luminaries as Mantar, Aldo Montoya, Duke Drozzi, the Bushwhackers, and well done. And there were only 5 choices to win with Michaels, Bulldog, Owen, Lex, and Crush. Which I would say are 3 more than this year, Way.
Hmm.
Viable picks for the Rumble.
Right.
He gives this minus 10 out of plus 10. Man, not an enjoyable
minus 10 out of
review.
Positive 10. Okay. Brad from Halifax. Few random thoughts. Jarrett and Scott Hall can work. Great match. Hard to believe that Hall was never a world champion despite having all the talent and size. Bret Hart and Kevin Nash had quite the match. I love a good old Rumble. It's funny to see...
Bret Hart.
I love a good Royal Rumble. It's funny to see all of the interesting Midgard ask, some of which turned into long-lasting characters... And others just funny reminders of what somebody thought it was a good idea. Wonder how many guys who appear in the Royal Rumble this year will be bad ideas. Okay.
Aram from Denmark. This pay-per-view again truly showed Bret Hart could get a great match out of anyone. I didn't enjoy the fastest Rumble ever because I always want them to last as long as possible. But my main attraction for this show was Mantar. I will never forget this gimmick. 5 out of 10. This Rumble match would have been way worse if it was double the time.
Oh, yeah.
This was the right call to make.
Absolutely.
This match... At 30-some-odd minutes, a good call.
Mm-hmm. McWhalen here says, for a 5-match WWE 1995 show, it was not too bad. The opener for the IC belt was good. The WWE title match was good, but in that weird midpoint of the show. And the Rumble was fast-paced, which was necessary because the lack of star power on the roster was evident at the time. The Taker-IRS match was just there and only served to further the near-endless feud between Taker and DiBiase that lasted most of 95 and served no purpose in the end. The Rumble had kind of a blink-and-miss-it thing going on. It was smart to go the fast-pace, but they wisely never did it again due to the many things happening at once. The Rumble itself was too fast-paced, and the whole thing lasted under 40 minutes, which made Shawn winning at number one kind of a joke. As for 95 Pamela Anderson, though, meh. Jenny McCarthy was way hotter than Anderson and still is quite attractive in my opinion.
Well, thank you for letting us know. Christian Small, I found the show in a discount bin with no cover on it back in 1997, so of course I brought it. I imagine he means bought it. I felt this show was pretty good. I have a soft spot for good old Double J, and I really liked his opener with Razor. The tag match told a good story, and it built your Mania main event. I feel that the WWF title match could have been better if they didn't do several run-ins leading to nothing. In fact, they all led to something, those run-ins, and they were done for a reason. The two would have much better matches over the next year. As for the Rumble, it was probably the weakest roster of guys ever, and I've always felt that while Shawn being number one and winning is played as a big deal, the fact that it was one of the shorter Rumbles takes away a little. Having said that, it's still one of the biggest Rumble moments ever, and it was carried by Shawn and Bulldog. Only downside to this show was Taker and IRS, although the story leading into it was hilarious to me.
Finally, we have Connor from Dublin.
McGregor?
Yes. Yes. He says he's just...
Thank you.
He says he's just been going through all the Rumbles himself on the network, so his thoughts on the card. This was the fastest Rumble in WWF history. Probably the most the worst Rumble so far in watching, and from recollection, I can only see 99 coming close. Worst lineup as of... Of course, 95 was a bad year for WWF. Only Luger, Crush, Bulldog, and Michaels came across as potential winners. Owen Hart being eliminated as quick as he was disappointed me, as he is one of the best workers in the Rumble. They shortened the intervals to obviously hide the roster's shortcoming. But in my opinion, the shortest interval just took away a big part of the Rumble. that I used to love. As for the rest of the card, I really enjoyed the opener in full. They still put over Ramon despite the loss. Knowing, though, that Ramon has never appeared in a Rumble match, and given how short the crew was this year, do you know why they didn't do double duty with some of the talent this year? Piss poor match with Taker and IRS. Good moment for the winners, although remembering how quickly Kid and Holly lost the titles after. 5 out of 10.
I don't know who you really, it wouldn't have really worked, I think, well to do the double duty with some of the guys. I mean, you know, you had Bret and Diesel doing the big title match. You had Hall, who was injured in storyline. I mean, it was about pushing those programs, and that was the key. I mean, Bret was not, I think he was used more effectively as the guy picking off Backlund and Owen than he would have throwing him into the match where it really didn't play a difference.
Yeah.
That's my thought.
Okay.
All right.
Cool.
It's time to wind things down, Mr. Ting.
Yeah.
And that means taking a look next week. And I want to give mention to the MVP of the Law Message Board over the last week or so. And that is Brad, who has gone to... Brad from Whitby, who has really taken this message board and going back, reviewing our reviews, which is also helping me as he is finding out some of the archives with the links just to make sure they are all in working order, which some of them in our many website changes have had some problems with. But he has also been reviving the review away request thread, which the great Hall of Famer Louis from Montreal began years ago and was quite the undertaking. He had to retire from this task. He needed to get a full-time job, and this was taking up too much.
Mm.
So Brad has been doing a tremendous job with the request thread. So I do encourage people to go to the pro wrestling section of our message board at lawradio.proboards.com and leave your requests for future reviews. We're kind of starting from scratch in that regard. And all our archives. I tweeted out last week when I fixed all these links and the amount of people that had no clue that we post all our archives.
Really?
We have reviews dating back to September of 2009.
Mm-hmm.
Hours of Wei Ting's life that makes him cry at night as he is looking at his Lego toys of how much time have I spent watching wrestling over the last 5 years. It's just incomprehensible for the man. But you can go up to the archive section. They're all on the message board. All of our shows are archived there. So do check them out.
Check them out. Leave feedback.
They're like fine wine.
Know. Yeah, let us know how we sound like 5 years ago, because I can't imagine.
Do you know our first review was like, it's like 30 minutes to do a whole pay-per-view.
Oh, wow.
God, do we drag now.
Yeah.
90 minutes here on the Rumble.
Okay.
30 of it on my head and my secret.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is my roundabout way of asking you, Mr. Ting, what will you allow me to watch over the next week?
What will I allow you to watch? Okay, well, I'm going to ask you for a number between 1 to 20.
1 to 20. I'm going to go with...
Make it good, man.
13.
13? All right. Well, I will look at our request thread, and basically we have 20 selections.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to count from the bottom. Number 13. Okay, let me go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Okay. I don't know if we could do this one.
Then let's move on to another one. I want one that you want to do and makes sense to do.
Okay. Let's do... Oh, man.
Oh, dear.
One that I want to do and makes sense to do. Let's do the... we should talk about this off air.
I'm keeping this in, which is now part of the count.
All right. To be honest, I don't know what's on a lot of these shows. So
let me see.
Here,
without revealing them. Okay. Okay. One of these I recently actually just watched.
Which is what?
The Conor McGregor documentary. I actually just watched recently.
Okay. And what do you think of that one?
Huh. You want to watch... I wonder if we could find that. Oh, God. Some of these, I can tell you, just look like horrendous choices. My body can't take thunder at this stage. It'd be fun to watch The Ultimate Fighter. I don't feel it would be fun for most people listening. That's just my assumption. Thunder in Paradise seems like a terrible idea. I can't watch Hulk Hogan act. I'm getting too old for this. Well, okay, let me ask you this way. Of these choices, are any of them appealing to you?
All right.
No, I mean that. You've seen the list. Are any of these appealing to you?
I mean, I definitely kind of want to watch that Connor documentary, but we just did the Prince David documentary.
Yeah.
And you've already seen
it. I just recently watched it, actually, right after we watched the Devitt one. I saw it then. Well, I just...
We've already done a documentary recently.
Well... What do you feel like watching? This is I have put this on you in this year way.
Oh, boy.
I want you to watch something where you don't come away questioning life.
No, I mean, I don't do that. You chose this.
You do.
I enjoyed this show. I gave it 7.5 out of 10. You chose this one. We're definitely going to have to edit some of this.
I'll remember to do that for sure.
Okay. You don't want to do the New Japan shows yet.
Well, the only thing is, only one episode's been released so far. Right. Episode 2, we don't even have a chance to really see yet.
Right. What's the WCW January show?
Sold out.
Okay. Do you dare?
I always dare. We could go that direction.
Oh my God. Sold out. Who the fuck is... Who's that?
That's Connor from Dublin.
Okay, okay, let's do another Rumble then.
Unless sure.
Do you think it'll be...
No. I think people like those.
Okay, let's do another
we
one.
We only did one. Okay, pick a year. Oh, shit. I might have them written from last week, the ones we haven't done. Okay, so do you want to pick a number?
Yeah. Let's try this again.
You know what? I have an idea. Why don't we do another Rumble?
Oh, that's a great idea.
That's a great idea.
You figured that out pretty quick.
Let's go back, and I have my list here from last week. Last week, we're going to do the same numbers that correspond with Rumbles we have not done. So you have to pick a number between 1 and 8. You don't want to do any from the past few years, I assume, right?
Yeah, I'll stay away from those.
Okay, so this goes
one,
from...
1 to 8?
This goes as late as 2006. Okay. 1 to 8.
Okay. 8.
That would be 2002.
Okay.
So that is the Rumble where Triple H is coming back after quad surgery. Does this sound appealing to you?
Sure. Okay. You don't have to worry. Don't worry about whether or not it's not going to be possible to find shows that are appealing to me every single week of the year.
That is my goal.
No. I guarantee you, you will not be able to achieve that. But is it appealing to you?
Did you ever watch the live version of Peter Pan where Tinkerbell is dying and...
A Hook.
Not the movie Hook, but the live adaptation of Peter Pan.
I don't think I've seen it.
And Peter Pan looks at the viewer at home at the screen and says, "Help save Tinkerbell." Clap. 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 No. And then you see the light get brighter and brighter as people clap. That's what our audience is doing, Wei, when they hear you know, struggling through bad wrestling. They're clapping. They're like, "Wait, live on."
No, please.
Wait.
Guys,
clap.
Don't like,
clap.
I've been getting messages like people asking, "Oh, when are you going to give up? When are you going to like stop and stuff?" And
it's a scary thought people have, Wei. Can you assure them?
I will not do that. I mean, it's just like I'll watch these shows anyway. It's the way it's always been, you know? Not every show I'm going to get super excited to watch, but I'll watch them anyway.
The 2002 Rumble is a good show,
okay.
I believe.
Cool. Great. Awesome.
Okay, we're going to go back.
Yeah.
To January 20th, 2002.
Wow, impressive.
In Atlanta.
That's very impressive.
For the Royal Rumble. That will be our review next week, so you can post up your feedback on the message board, watch the show, and we will chat with you all at a later time. By the Wei, before we get out of here, the Royal Rumble pool, we should make mention. Deadline is this Sunday,
3 p.m. Eastern Time. You can submit your picks free of charge at royalrumble.info. And we have heard from some people who have had some difficulty submitting their picks on an iPad or iPhone. Best to use a desktop. There doesn't seem to be any issues with that. We have had hundreds of submissions at this point. So don't be daunted by that. Just be ready. It's thick competition, Mr. Ting, for the Review Away Royal Rumble pool.
Yeah.
And we'll be announcing the winner next Monday. You are ineligible, as am I. We can't win this.
Okay, I'll still play.
So we will go ballot by ballot next Monday night through all of the hundreds.
Hand count?
Yes.
Recount?
Yes. We'll live count them on the podcast and announce our winner next Monday night. And you will be joining us, I assume, Sunday night for the Rumble?
I'll be there.
It is a waiting appearance before the law. You're welcome to stick around for the show.
Thanks.
I know you have to get going. You have an early morning on Monday. But Wei will watch the Royal Rumble with us on Monday, and then he will share his thoughts. Wait, the Rumble's on Sunday.
Yeah.
He will give his thoughts on Monday on Review of Raw. Such a long time, Wei. It's Wednesday, and then you don't talk to me until Monday.
That's not true.
There's these gaps, Wei.
That's not true.
It's
not true at all. I really feel like, you know, I'm like Pamela Anderson here, and everybody's trying to get me to, you know, shower me with gifts, try to get me to interested in their.
And we're all trying to impress you, and you're just laughing and just look at these idiots.
No, trust me, I'm not. I'm more of a Jenny McCarthy.
Okay, myself. Well, you look beautiful, Wei.
Well, thank you,
and we appreciate. We would allow you to talk.
Okay. Well, thanks.
All right, that's all for us. We're going to go out with something creative, as we did last week, where we heard from John Quinn from the documentary Knuckle, who is our Irish representative to end last week's show.
Is that what we went out with?
You need to listen to the ends, Wei, of your own shows.
Oh,
you wanted to hear somebody Irish.
Okay.
So there was a tie-in. That's the guy, the bare-knuckle fighter, who will be fighting Ken Shamrock in April.
Oh,
which
wow.
is absolutely an event we will review.
Okay, done.
John Quinn McDonough and Ken Shamrock.
Happy to watch that.
We're going to go out with maybe some of Pamela Anderson's finer acting exploits.
I love that, yeah. Be sure to look up the acting videos.
All right. Yeah. As Bret Hart would say, good night.
Pamela, next year. Can't wait to see you after the Rumble. We'll go out and paint the town red, white, and blue later.
Hey, Pam, Big Daddy Cool here. Hey, after the Rumble, why don't you and I go out and paint the town black and chrome? Give me a call, baby.
30 WWF Superstars.
Yo, Pam, hey, I'm great kid here. Couldn't help but notice you checking me out on the beach after I win the
Wingle.
Hey, Baby Sue, baby. This is Double J. How about it? It's going to be a double treat the night of the Rumble. I'm winning it.
Hey, Pamela, what do you say after I win the Royal Rumble? You win Prince
of Prince.
Hey, Baywatch lady, I can't wait to see you at Tampa. Oh, yeah, after the Rumble, the King's going to give you the
WWF
treatment.
Royal Rumble, live Sunday, January 22nd, only on pay-per-view.
What a night it's going to be.
Good night, good night, good night, good night, good night.